I think that's close enough. I can start now. And first of all, for those of you who've come to the introduction to meditation class, a series of four lectures on a Saturday afternoon, which run at the same time as this class, that introduction to meditation class is being held in the community hall, which is just as you go out, turn right, the next hall along the road. And that's being held there because, as usual, this is where we can teach meditation much more deeply and sit longer, and that's tough for people who just start to meditate. But nevertheless, that if anyone gets stuck in here and they're doing the long meditation, it still can be done. When I started meditating, they always said you should sit on the ground, on the floor. But that's very tough for people in, especially Western countries, people who've had maybe accidents or getting old. And that means that you can't sit on the floor very comfortably, and that's why we have chairs where you can meditate, or stools or cushions. But if you're sitting on a chair, I've known people who've never actually been in a Buddhist temple before, and they can sit on a chair for a couple of hours, watching a movie or a football match. Why can they be comfortable doing that? And the reason is, of course, that they have they're enjoying what they're doing. And they've got a natural focus, being pulled in to the movie or pulled in to the football match or whatever else they're supposed to be watching. And that delight means they're not spending too much time worrying about their body and thinking about it. Because what happens with the body, as you probably all know by now, that it can be just have an ache or a pain somewhere or sickness, but when you keep looking at it, worrying about it, thinking about it, the pain gets worse. It tends to increase. And of course, I've known that many, many times when I was that last night's talk or the talk to the monks? I think the talk to the monks last Wednesday. That's the time when I was just walking down the road in Thailand on arms round, and just being very mindful, but it was in the central part of Thailand. Walking down the road, I trod on a nail, a 4-inch nail, dirty, rusty old nail. It went right through my foot. So the sharp end, you could see it on the top of the foot. It went right the way through. It was like what you call a Jesus moment. Please excuse me. But I don't know why, it must have hit an acupuncture point or something, but it never hurt at all. I just looked at it and thought, oh, that's interesting. And you see it now popped up through the top of your skin. But the monk who was with me, he just took one look at that and said, oh, that's terrible, oh. And as soon as he said that, it started to hurt. You had moments like that before? Where sometimes you're doing fine until somebody else thought it was really gross. And then, you know, that you took on that perception and it became painful. And that's one of the reasons why, that if you're enjoying what you're doing, then you find your body is not a problem anymore. You're enjoying it. And even if you're sick, I had that old anecdotes now. One of the most interesting anecdotes, because it was weird at the time, that I had a long time ago, a very bad cold. It could have been the flu, I'm not sure, but this was over 50 years ago when I was a student. And so I just, in the morning, you sort of decided best to stay home that day because I was sneezing and coughing and the eyes were watering and it felt really terrible. And so I just stayed at home in this house where the students were staying, feeling really terrible. And that's where everyone else had gone to university for their classes and I was just at home by myself. And then somebody rang the doorbell, and I just ignored them. They kept on ringing, and I ignored them, and rang again. So in my pajamas, just going down to the door, and it was a delivery for me. And there's a few people about my age, you know, it was like a hi-fi system. You know, these days you can just get a little piece of iPhone and you get any music you want. in those days, to get any music, you had to have a record player, disc player, and then an amplifier, and then speakers, and plug it all in, and the disc as well, the vinyl disc. And I'd been waiting for it. It's mine. I sent it up from London to the university where I was staying, and it arrived. And I felt terrible. I felt so sick, but also excited. I had something interesting to do. So I lugged it upstairs to where my room was, and I just decided to put it all together, plug it all in. And I put my first record on, the first disc, which happened to be, please excuse me, Jimi Hendrix, which I liked when I was young. And then the first record, the first track on that final disc, I noticed something very strange. I wasn't sneezing. My eyes had cleared up. No cough. I was healthy. Just in 5 minutes, or maybe 10 or 15 minutes, the excitement of, you know, doing something which I was waiting for and wanting to hear some music, and then listening to the music, whatever it was, that joy, that excitement, had overcame my cold or flu, whatever it was. So that's, and if you don't like getting the AstraZeneca jab or Pfizer jab, you can always try listening to Jimi Hendrix to get rid of flus and colds. But of course, it wasn't that particular type of music which I'm talking about. It was the fact that I brought some joy into my mind, my body. And that joy, that happiness, that I know is what healed, allowed the healing to happen in the body. The joy allows the body to relax. Instead of laying in bed feeling terrible, just like, you know, reminding myself, oh, this hurts, this is terrible, I don't feel good. That was actually making the illness last. But as soon as I kick that negativity out and have some positivity, joy, then it allowed the illness to vanish very, very quickly. And I've often noticed that the joy, the happiness which you put into meditation, or decide to see that in your meditation, you find that relaxes the body. And it also is the key to be able to watch the mind without stress. I know when Ajahn Chah always used to say, we meditate to let go of things. We meditate to have less. We don't meditate to attain things and get more. It's a very powerful teaching, very, very brief, but very powerful. He would repeat it all the time, meditate to let go. You're not trying to attain anything. Because if you're trying to get somewhere, trying to attain something, or trying to get rid of things, you find then that gives rise to more stress. That's what you do in the world. You go to work to get some money to pay the bills, or you clean the house to get rid of the dirt. You know, you brush your teeth to get rid of the plaque or whatever's on it. We always do things to get something or get rid of things. And that's a lot of stress. So imagine living a stress-free 40 minutes. How can you live stress-free for 40 minutes? You're sitting down there not wanting to get anywhere in the whole world. Even want to get good places. It's stress. And if you wanted to get rid of things, which is an ache or a pain in the body, or tiredness, or a restless mind. I don't like my restless mind. I want to be still. That's stress. So imagine, just imagine, you're sitting down here and you're really sleepy. You're tired. You've had a very busy day. And you say, mind, I allow you to be sleepy. If you want to, I'm not going to stop you. Have a good sleep. Imagine saying that and meaning it. It means you're taking away all the stress and the negativity, which is what adds to the sleepiness and makes that sleepiness last longer and longer and longer. Because after, I've been meditating such a long time, and then after a while you realize, that works. If I'm dull and sleepy, allow myself to be dull and sleepy. Usually because I've been didn't sleep well last night or something, or got disturbed, or lots of things to do, and could be something physical or whatever. And so I let it be. I don't fight. It's not my business. I'm happy to be here with a sleepy mind. I'm content. I don't demand anything. I'm not meditating to get something. When I do that properly, sleepiness doesn't last long at all. 5 minutes, 4 minutes, 3 minutes, or whatever. It's very fast, it just vanishes. And the energies of the mind come back again. If I fight it, I'm wasting energy. And that's very similar, please excuse me, for anyone who feels depressed. You fight depression, I don't want to be depressed. This is terrible, I've got things to do, oh, I don't like being depressed. Again, you're getting depressed about being depressed, and negativity which you're adding to the mind is actually feeding the depression. Imagine being at peace with depression. Happy to be here. You find depression can't last long with that sort of mind. You're not fighting it anymore. You're not feeling diminished by your lack of energy. You're not making anything negative about it at all. It's just part of life. It can't last. So anyway, that's the same way about even when your mind is restless. Think about all sorts of things, all the plans which you have, all the things which you're going to do next, all the exciting things you're going to do this evening. Actually, I know that we don't need to wear masks anymore. Have the nightclubs opened up again? It's a trick question. If you answer that one, I know that you're not keeping your precepts. I don't know you are, of course. But I don't know what you're going to do this evening. Just meditate. Very good. But all those thoughts, you know, sometimes why do we do that? Restless mind. Sometimes it's just what the mind, you've given it instructions. You've got to think about this. And the mind is just following what you want it to do. You're not giving it any other instructions. And the best way of stopping the restless mind is not fighting it, but being kind, having fun, enjoying this moment. Because you find, if you are watching a movie, say, or you're listening to a talk, and it's a very good talk with lots of lovely jokes. if you're listening to a good talk and you're enjoying it, you find it keeps your attention. You want to listen to what's happening in the next part of the talk. It's fun, it's enjoyable. It has to be a little bit unpredictable talks. That is one of the problems of telling the same old story so many times, that you know what's going to happen next. And of course that's when you turn off. When there's something new happens, which you haven't experienced before, you change the story a tiny bit, then you find that you're awake, you're alert. It's very clear how to overcome the sleepy mind, the dull mind, and the restless mind, which keeps on thinking. And that's actually experiencing something which you enjoy. And I'm not talking about having fantasies of winning the lottery or something. I'm talking about just being in this moment and putting joy into it. Just doing a bit of marketing for yourself. You're here, meditation time. All the things which you don't have to do right now. You don't have to wash the dishes. You don't have to cook. You don't have to check your emails. You don't have to write emails. You don't have to go to work. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to strive for anything. You're here not to attain things, but just to be here. Not trying to get somewhere else. You strove so hard in your car, in a bus, walking, whatever, to get into this hall. Now you've arrived. So relax and be here. I don't have to do anything in the whole world. You know, that's like being on holiday. Remember, like going on holiday, finish your work. Ah, I've got 2 weeks, 3 weeks, I don't have to do anything, just relax. But how many people really know how to go on holiday? Some people, they've got 2 weeks off and they stress themselves out going through airports, checking they're on the flight in time. Or these days, going down south to get away from it all, and finding everyone else in Perth is always also going down south to get away from it all. In other words, we don't know how to relax, how to just be, not go anywhere, and enjoy this moment. You know, wherever you are in this world, so many places when you can see its beauty, that it's so easy to be here. In many, many different places. But anyway, you're right here now. This is good enough. You're not disturbed. You're here, it's reasonably peaceful. It's not cold, it's not warm. You're safe, you're comfortable. It doesn't cost any money. You're free. And in that state of freedom, just being happy to be here, it's quite easy to see some joy, some fun, even just smiling a little bit more. I've said many times the most important part of the posture when you're meditating is not your hand posture, it's not your leg posture, it's not you've got a straight back or not, it's the posture of your mouth. Honestly, if you put a smile on your face in the middle of your meditation, if the meditation's not working, getting dull, change the posture of your mouth. And if you smile, it's amazing just what that does to the meditation. It means the meditation, you're telling your mind by your posture of a little smile on the face, that this is a fun thing to do. The meditation is expected to be joyful, supposed to be joyful. It's so much fun doing nothing. Don't you like doing nothing? Would you like to be lazy? People just don't know what laziness is in this world. They think they're lazy, it means you're just, you know, going through the YouTube or something, or going through their emails, or doing something. That's not being lazy. Being lazy is just sitting here and doing absolutely nothing. Can you do that? Why can't you do that? Because people say you're supposed to achieve something, do something useful. There's so many people doing useful things in this world, that's what causes most of the trouble. People doing useful things, is they're just being able to sit still and be peaceful. There used to be this old saying when I was growing up young, don't just sit there, do something. It was actually Thich Nhat Hanh swapped that around. Don't just do something, sit there. He said, don't. That's right, that's what he's changed around. Instead of from don't just sit there, do something, he changed around to don't just do things, sit here. It's much more radical being able to sit here instead of doing things. It's also far more enjoyable. And it's that joy which comes up in the meditation, sitting here and the body is joyful and the mind is joyful. Is having a good time. And where you're finding joy is in some of the most amazing places, in peace, stillness, quietness. It's a beautiful place to be. The joy of beauty. The beauty which isn't concocted from things outside. The beauty which has always been there inside, but we've forgotten to look for it. We don't recognize it. Just sitting here, being still, being silent, and experiencing how gorgeous it is. And many people tell me they like going to places like Bodhinyana Monastery or Jhana Grove. It's a beautiful place to be. Scenically, there are many more beautiful forests, healthier trees, places with waterfalls and big mountains. But what they really mean is the peace there, the silence, feeling of safety, the feeling there's nothing you need to do there. You're just welcome. And you don't have to fulfill any responsibilities. You're not going to be judged. Free. That's why people feel it's beautiful. And that same beauty you can see inside of yourself. Sitting here with your eyes closed, meditating, nothing you need to do. No one's going to judge you. There's no noise of this mind giving you commands. Everything slows down, is peaceful, and the mind brightens up and is gorgeous. That inner beauty is what makes all those negative emotions like restlessness and tiredness, wanting and not wanting, all disappear. And even doubts. Many people have told me this, and it's a very common experience. You may have all these questions you wanted to ask, but after meditation, when your mind is calm, those questions vanish. They're not needed anymore. That fifth hindrance of doubt disappears. You are now calm. It's like you're the place you don't need questions anymore. Stillness, peace, inner joy. And that's where all the questions have their final answer. Okay, I better keep shut up, otherwise I keep on going on. So, that's the trouble when you have to take, or when you can take the masks off. My mouth takes advantage of that and talks too much. Maybe I should put my mask back on. So anyway, so let's do some meditation now. So if you like to close your eyes, it's always a nice thing to do. I'm just going to arrange my posture a little bit. And with the eyes closed, again, bring the attention onto your body. How are you sitting? It doesn't matter whether it's on a chair, a stool, a cushion, or leaning against the wall. As long as your body can relax sufficiently so it doesn't really need much attention for the next 40 minutes. I begin with just an overview of my body, just general, making sure it's pretty okay. But then I become more specific, a more refined relaxation of the body, starting with my legs, to be mindful, aware of my legs. I use that very simple technique of asking a question. How are you? How are you, legs? And I'll listen for the answer. I don't just make that question just superficially. It really is an inquiry. How my legs feel right now. they're in a usual posture, but I want to make sure that they're comfortable today. And this isn't just for the attainment of ease and relaxation. It's also, it's establishing, turning on this process of mindfulness and kindness. And that kindfulness is going to be used all the way into the deepest parts of the meditation. It's just so simple by just asking, I'm now asking my legs, do you need to be adjusted? Later on, I just ask my mind, how can you be more peaceful? But now it's just to comfort the physical feeling of my legs. I'm adjusting them slightly. And then I inquire the same question to my butt. So that's only a small area of my body, but nevertheless, I do give it special attention. Because too often in my meditations, I haven't put it in a good position. It's been aches and pains and had to fidget. Make sure the butt is comfortable. And I pause to be aware of the feeling in my butt. I know it very well, the pressure. But the body's used to that. So now it can just stay with that and it will just be comfortable for the rest of the meditation. And I go out to my back. Stretching my back. And then letting it be. This one way which I've used to make my back nice and strong but comfortable. If I find any part of my back which is tense, and actually my shoulders are a bit tense, but I'll get up to them later on. I also go to the front of my body as well. And with it, just all the organs inside. I feel the, not the tension or tightness, we can feel that my colon and intestines have been digesting my lunch. You can feel they're a bit tired. Can't even call it an ache, but a special feeling post eating. Make sure it's all relaxed and at ease. And just keep on going up my body. If I find any ache or tightness anywhere, I pause. Stop at that particular place. Zoom in on that part of my body. And just I learn how to make it peaceful, relax it. When you practice mindfulness of the body, it's pretty easy to learn what relaxes it and what makes it more tense. You can just relax it just at will. Notice it. Expand any tightness. Loosen any stretching. So the muscles are loose. That area feels free and unafraid. And feel that whole area of your body starts to become so easy, so relaxed. Where once it was a ball, a knot of tight energy called pain. And I go up to my shoulders, rest of my body is fine. And relax those shoulders. when they're pulled apart or squashed, when not allowed to be in their natural position. Of course, that's called stress, and that creates the pain later on. So I catch it early, relax everything. And I use kindness. Beautiful kindness. So the body can be at ease. And go down my arms, past my elbows and wrists to my hands. Check how my hands are. And 5 minutes we've had so far that my hands have not been in a comfortable position because I haven't really looked to see. So now I move them. And now they're comfortable. I care about the different parts of my body. I'm aware of them. So if I find any problem anywhere, I'll try and deal with it. That's why I have very, very good health. And I go to my neck. Making sure the head is well balanced, not too far forward or too far back. Sometimes I've opened my eyes during meditation, seeing some people's postures, their heads all over the place. I make sure it's balanced, so my neck will not have any strains during this meditation period. And I go to the muscles around the eyes and the mouth, relaxing them. I can feel those muscles, especially around my eyes right now. I'm loosening those muscles. So my eyes, because of looking at this and looking at that, are tired. So even though my eyes are closed, the muscles need a bit of TLC around my eyes to loosen, relax, and be at ease. I'll do the same around my mouth. But today, I'm also going to turn up the corners of my mouth for a smile. Even if you fake the smile, it still brings joy to the mind. It sort of reminds my mind that this meditation is joyful, fun, happy. I feel my whole body, not as made up of parts, but as a unified vehicle. My whole body relaxed. But then I do notice just how joyful relaxation is. I give that feeling of relaxation and ease value. I've learned how to perceive the joy of physical relaxation. And that always brings that relaxation deeper. The body feeling more at ease. And then I turn my attention to my mind. How peaceful am I right now? And I know the feeling of peace, I know what to look for. Peace is an old friend. I know how peaceful I am. Sometimes on Peaceometer I give it like a reading, but I don't personally do that anymore, I just know. I know what causes that peace to get deeper. In particular, no past, no future. This moment is the only moment I have. It's where all that is good, my health, comfort, wisdom, whatever, is being built. It's being constructed right now. So I really care and value this moment above any moment in the future. This is the most important time for me, now. I learn how to rest and relax here. Until the present moment feels joyful. It's a delightful place to hang out. And very productive. When I see the joy in the present, I don't need to focus on it. I don't need to strive to keep the present moment inside. It stays by itself. Because I'm enjoying it. And right inside the present moment, like if you wish in its center, the center of the present moment, you can hear the silence, your thoughts, your questions, all disappear. Can you hear silence inside? I'm so peaceful, so joyful. It's a gorgeous place to be. And when you start noticing silence, it gets deeper, more profound, more rich. You see more beauty. It's like seeing a tiny wildflower, which most people just walk over. You see this beautiful silence. It's gorgeous. There's many different aspects to it. Like a wildflower, so many different colors. silence possesses so many different forms of beauty. It's like in silence, you are free to hear the world, to listen to nature. If you can't see the delight yet, go to your face, smile, and then go back into your mind, into the silence. It's more delightful. Soon one becomes aware of one's breathing. This carries on. Not trying to get anywhere, but letting the mind become more peaceful. Let it do it by itself. Your job is just to make sure that you don't interfere. I will be quiet now until close to the end of the meditation period. getting close to the end of the meditation period. What are you aware of right now? And how much delight has it got? Joy. In a few moments when we open our eyes, you can compare how you feel now to how you feel outside of meditation. Which is more delightful? And why? And start to become aware of your body. Relaxed at ease. I will now ring the gong 3 times to formally end this period of meditation. There we go. Okay, so sometimes we have some questions from overseas because this is always live streamed. But anyway, we're waiting for questions from overseas. Any questions from people here? Okay, let's get the overseas ones first. Very good. Very good. We have from Montreal in Canada, from Germany, and from Czechoslovakia. Sorry, Czech Republic. First of all, from Gabrielle in Montreal, what would be things to consider as someone to think about becoming a monk, ready to leave all attachments and go all in? You know, sometimes when I wanted to become a monk, I had no idea why. I didn't think about it properly. Because my ideal was I was going to go to Thailand. I just finished a relationship with a girlfriend, a long-term relationship. I had a good education, so I was free. I thought I'd take this opportunity, I'll go to Thailand and ordain as a monk for maybe 1 year, 2 years, become enlightened, and then come back to England and get married and have a family. It was really dumb. I mean, after a while, you don't know just exactly becoming a monk, becoming a nun. There may be something underneath you really want to give it a try. But the nice thing about this tradition is you do give it a try for a while. And if it doesn't work out, you leave. And you always gain so much. And a number of the monks who were monks with me who disrobed, and then a couple of years later they get married. And it really surprised me that their wives come along and say, "Ajahn Brahm, thank you for training my husband." Because ex-monks apparently they make wonderful husbands. They've been trained, they can even cook, they can clean, and they're kind, they're sensitive. It's true. So anyway, but to be able to know what to consider, you just give it a try. You don't know until you give things a try. So over here, people go and visit the monastery. They stay for a month or so and just see how it works for them. Same as in Dhammasara. Stay over there, see if you really feel you fit in and you like that lifestyle. And then some people are just one of the most amazing stories, what to consider before you become a monk. This particular gentleman, he was English as well. And you know, he just finished his university degree in, I think, psychology, I think it was. And he just had a friend of a friend of a friend who would help export-import horses into Singapore to race. And according to the rules, if a horse is on an aircraft, they need about four or five, special aircraft obviously, four or five grooms, you know, to look after the horse in case the horse got a bit cranky. So he said, well, you know about horses, you've ridden one before, and so do you want a free trip to Singapore? Just, one way, just, in case a horse gets into trouble. And then afterwards, once you're in Singapore, you can just slowly backpack your way back to UK after university before getting a job. So that's what he did. He landed in Singapore. Then what do you do after Singapore? You just go up through Malaysia and into Thailand, into Bangkok. When he was in Bangkok, just hanging around with other young people, there was this doctor and nurses. They were working for Save the Children Fund. And they were in charge of the refugee camp in Ubon Ratchathani in the northeast of Thailand. And they just asked him, well, do you want to come and see some of the countryside? I said, oh yeah. Didn't know why, but went up there to northeast Thailand and staying in, with the doctors and nurses in the refugee camp. And then just said, well, what to go and see? Honestly, in that part of Thailand, there's nothing much to see. There's no lakes or waterfalls or big mountains. So, there's some monks. And they're Western monks. They can speak English. So, I'll go have a chat. So he went to Wat Ba Nanachat, and that's the monastery which I was in most of the time when I was in northeast Thailand. And he wasn't even a Buddhist. And he went there in the afternoon, had a chat to some of the monks, and just liked it. And just asked, so okay if I stay the night? I said, yeah, sure. And so he stayed the night there, and in the morning, he shaved off his hair by himself, and went up to the abbot then, and said, I think I want to be a monk. And so we ordained him. And he just, from nowhere, just came in. And that was about, how many years ago now? 40 years ago or something. He's now the abbot of Amawati Monastery in England, big monastery in England. That's Ajahn Amaro. That's how he started. A crazy story. He didn't know much about Buddhism at all. But also, with him, another bit of the craziness about that story is, at that time, I was doing the visas for everybody, so I could write Thai. And I said, what's your name? And it was, his name as a layperson was Jeremy Horner. I said, oh, Horner, that's not a usual English name, but there was this professor at Cambridge, Professor I.B. Horner, who did a lot of translation work from Pali into English. Even if you go into the library over there, you can see some of her books, Professor I.B. Horner. And so I asked this young man, I said, do you know someone known Irene Horner, professor at Cambridge? He said, no, I don't know anything. I never heard of her before. Must be another part of the long-distant family. But then, when he went home, he asked his dad, do you know anyone called I.B. Horner? And his dad went sort of quiet. It was his dad's sister. It was his auntie. but they had some sort of family problem, and so they never talked about her. So this fellow just turned up in Wat Bhadnanachat, not knowing anything about Buddhism, you know, just see what happens. Became a monk the next day, or not the next day, but shaved his hair the next day and started training to become a monk. He was the nephew of this famous Pali Buddhist scholar in Cambridge. He never knew anything about her. Weird, is the world is really weird. And anyway, so you want to be a monk? You want to be a nun? Who knows what's going to happen? You just go and stay at Gijiganap and just stay overnight. In the morning, you've had your hair shaved and say, please ordain me, please ordain me. Weird, but that's a totally true story. And other people who say, yeah, I really want to become a monk, and they train for it, and they get to monastery, and they last a couple of days, and then they go home. You can't tell. So you give it a try and see if it fits for you. I'm from Germany. How can I separate from my emotion to... How can I separate from my emotion to watch it, embrace it, calm it down, and find stillness and peace? Have problems after a lung operation to find peace and breathe easy. It's don't try to breathe easy, don't try to watch the emotions. You're just there with them. But don't own them. Don't think they're yours. Because it's when you think they're yours, you get that emotional involvement, and entanglement was the word I was looking at. What's yours, what you own, you feel responsible for, and you get entangled inside of it. So imagine if it's like somebody else's emotions. You care about the other person, maybe someone very close to you, you love them, you care for them. It's not yours. When you put some distance, non-ownership of those emotions and the observer, if you like, then you can actually just have that space enough to understand what these emotions are. But when they're yours, they're really, really important, and you just can't just stand back and watch. You have to do something, because it's yours. So try and get some space and non-ownership of those emotions, and then it's much easier to watch it and see it for what it is. And from Czech Republic, dear Ajahn, when the mind is too restless during meditation, is it good to give up and let it do whatever it wants for a while? It's weird, but I sometimes find peace in the chaos there. Exactly. So when the mind is really restless, what to do? That's one of the other problems, and people try and fight the restlessness. I've said this many times here, it's a common question. Though I was trained to watch the breath, to watch the breathing, and then the mind would wander off somewhere, and I was trained to bring the mind back. Wander off again, bring it back. Wander off again, bring it back. That's about 10 years I did that. Wander off, bring it back, wander off, bring it back, wander off, bring it back. And I said, hey, hang on. What am I doing? Well, instead of just trying to bring it back, I thought, why does it wander off in the first place? And the answer was so simple once I asked the question, why? Why do these things happen? What's the causes of them? And the answer was obvious. Why do people, like, you know, you have a relationship and your partner wanders off? Why is it that you have like a good friend and then that friendship breaks down? Why do people separate? It is because you don't enjoy one another's company. You know what it's like sometimes? This was one anecdote. Meeting an old friend from my college days, I hadn't seen him for years. And as soon as you saw him, it's like an old friend. And this, we spent the next about 3 or 4 hours just talking to one another. And those hours went past so quickly. And there wasn't, I didn't, you know, need to sort of, okay, I won't see him again for a while, and I'll make sure I just make use of the time. It's just so natural, being someone you like, an old friend. It's the same I remember from that. That's exactly how the mind works. If I'm meditating and then get some beautiful peace coming up. Hey, hey, where have you been? How have you been? I haven't seen you for a while. How are you doing, peace? It's such an old friend that we chill out together, sometimes for hours. And it's just like being with a good old friend and you're just enjoying each other's company. Sometimes you forget all your other duties. It is difficult sometimes doing meditation, talks like this on a Saturday afternoon. You're just again sitting here, you know, I just had a peek at the clock and it was, 3:57 or something. I thought, oh no, I don't want to come out. And often, you know, it's really touch and go sometimes. One of these days I'm just going to do it and just forget about you. You're just having too much fun, and just with a good old friend. And says, oh, you know, you can look after yourself. So because of that, you can understand that the mind doesn't wander, doesn't want to go anywhere. So if you have a restless mind, it's because you're not enjoying where you are. You want to go somewhere else. So if you experience some restlessness in the meditation, one of the things I love doing is just, oh, the mind is restless, be restless. It's my mind. If you want to be restless, fine. I love you, mind. If my best friend just wants to just go off and just have a cup of coffee or something, I'll go there. Off you go, have a cup of coffee. I don't need one. And then I'll come back afterwards. You know, if you love your mind like that, treat it like a friend. Of course, it will never go too far away from you. Which means that it always comes back to you. Because it loves you, and you love your mind. That way you hang out together. So restlessness doesn't happen these days for me. It's weird. Wherever I am, here I am. That's it. Of course, the other little way of looking at restlessness, that time when I used to have all these airline tickets and go travelling all over the place, and people said, don't you get tired of travelling? I said, no. And I asked myself, why? And it was because I don't travel. I just changed my perception as you can change the perception about being restless. When I'm in the aircraft, I just sit down on the seat. I don't fly, I just sit. And it's weird, you know, if you shut the window, it's a nighttime flight or whatever, you shut the window, you're just sitting down, not doing anything. And then somebody says, okay, we're landing now in Warsaw. You've got a Polish lady there. Or we're landing in, where else can we land? In Athens. We're landing in Bangkok. We're landing in wherever you lived before. And you just get out and you traveled all that distance, but you haven't traveled anywhere. You just sat down perfectly still. The plane has done the traveling. I haven't. And I like that simile, because that's the same when, okay, you're supposed to be watched. That's the point. If you're supposed to be watching something, watching the breath or watching your, then of course you get restless. So instead of trying to watch the breath, or just watch whatever's right in front of you. Whatever's right in front of you right now, that's the most important thing in the world. Be kind to it. It's in this moment. Then you can't be restless anymore. You're just here, watching this moment. How can you be restless? It's restless is when you want to be somewhere else. When you want to be here, wherever here happens to be, then you can't be restless. So when the person's had some operation, hard to breathe, it just you're breathing. Worrying about it makes it worse, obviously. So just breathe in, breathe out. And when you're meditating, of course it should be the easiest thing in the world. He's gone now. Where's Jake gone? Jake was, he's one of our AV coordinators. He was just telling me that one of our friends, I gave him permission, was going to meditate in my cave. And was breathless, wondering if there's not enough oxygen in the cave. And I've been meditating, I don't know how many years, 15, 20 years in that cave, I've always been fine. So what do you do if you find it not enough oxygen there? It's okay. If you relax, you're not breathing very much, you're peaceful, you don't need much oxygen. If you worry, I'm going to die, then you breathe very fast. So that's why just learning how to be peaceful, not worrying about anything, is by meditating you're probably the safest thing if you can't breathe properly, because you don't need much oxygen when you're meditating. If your metabolism rises because of fear, then you need more oxygen, and there you may feel that it's not enough for you. But I've been fine. All these years, I've never been breathless in my cave. Always been very peaceful. I love it in there. Anyway, oh, there's another question. I thought I'd finish. Okay, from Canada. How do we interpret the Anapanasati Sutta where the Buddha refers to the brain, the breath as body among bodies? Is the rising, falling breath like birth-death cycle, your take? No, that's adding too much. Is when it says in the Anapanasati Sutta, you just, the third stage of Anapanasati, you watch the whole body of breath, sabbakaya patisavvedi. And when the Buddha said the breath is like just one of the bodies, you know, that's the evidence which I've used, because it happens naturally. You're watching the whole of the breath, from beginning to end. The whole of the breath. Nothing to do with the physical body. Imagine to watch all the sabba, all of the body at that particular time. Oh, crikey, that's just far too disturbing. Just hold the breath. So you see me do this in meditation retreats before, you start to see the whole of my finger moving left to right, in-out breath, in-out breath. Left, is that left? No, so you're right to left to right, left to right. Right to left to right, in, out, in, out, in, out. That's you start that when you're watching the breath. This is natural, it's not what you do. And after a while you just see the whole movement of the breath from beginning to end. That's one in-breath. Out-breath from beginning to end. The whole of the breath. The whole of all the parts of the breath. This is a much deeper awareness. Instead of just saying in, out, it's in the very beginning of an in-breath. So it all grows to the very end of an in-breath. So that's actually what it means, the whole body of breath. And that happens naturally. You can't stop it. Just watching your breath, you start to see, your mindfulness becomes far more refined. You start to see more of it. From the very beginning, when the in-breath is just born. Oh, and that's really joyful. I'm going to stop, otherwise I just want to close my eyes and do some more meditation. It's true, it's just when I did that, just, oh, that's nice. Because it does, my mind remembers that. Remembers this is beautiful stuff. So anyway, that's in the Anapanasati Sutta. Anapanasati means breath meditation, mindfulness along with the breath. And just one last point to make it very clear to you, that Anapanasati, mindfulness along with the breath, that's how it's pronounced. Pana means the breath. And it does not mean Anapanasati. Anapanasati is mindfulness along with pain. And I don't know why people do that. So they sit here, they're going to endure. Yeah, it's hurting, but yeah, I'm stronger than this. That's called Anapanasati, mindfulness along with pain. Please honestly don't do that. Because every now and again you see these articles, the latest one was someone showed me from, I think the BBC or something, saying that sometimes people who do breath meditation or mindfulness meditation, sometimes there's negative sides to it. because they're not doing it properly, for goodness sake. They're supposed to do anapanasati. It's painful, difficult, carry on sitting, don't move. You learn something. No gain, so no pain, no gain. That's not true. No delight, no joy, no bliss, no... What rhymes with bliss? I don't know. But anyway, no nibbana. So this is a very... Okay, that's good enough. Okay, that means it's time to go. Thank you very much. Okay, let's pay respects. If you have any questions, you can come up and ask afterwards. Thank you.